Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games. It's 34 degrees at 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A significant step in the search for answers in the plane-helicopter collision over the Potomac River. Here's ABC Transportation Correspondent Gio Benitez.
The black boxes from the American Airlines plane, transported in the same water they were pulled from to preserve the integrity of the recordings, now in the hands of the NTSB for evaluation. An early focus for the investigation, the flight path of the helicopter. Preliminary data showing it was flying at about 350 feet when it should have been under 200.
67 people were killed in that crash. 40 bodies found so far. Divers are returning to the river today. President Trump planned to slap those 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada as soon as tomorrow. Canadian Premier Doug Ford vowing to counterpunch by pulling American alcohol off store shelves in Ontario. Hamas says it will release three more hostages tomorrow as a part of the Gaza ceasefire talks. Keith Siegel, an American-Israeli citizen, among them. This is ABC News. More violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo as security forces clash with rebels backed by Rwanda. Hospitals already overwhelmed. ABC's Michelle Franzen.
Rwanda's president says he's prepared for confrontation following international criticism of his country's alleged role in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The M23 rebel group, which the UN says is backed by Rwanda, has seized Goma, the largest city in the DRC. Eastern Congo has been plagued by conflict for more than 30 years since the 1994 Rwandan genocide.
New Secretary of State Marco Rubio is set to make his first international trip, and it will be to Panama. The president there says despite demands from President Trump, control of the Panama Canal is not on the table. When the Grammys are held this weekend, Taylor Swift will definitely be on stage. She has been added as a presenter for Sunday night's show. Swift has half a dozen nominations, Beyonce 11. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. Fish is served from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays only. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world, and after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best, open at 11 a.m. Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, this area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
This is Mark Jelenic with the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Individuals often seek ways to ease the burden from their loved ones. One of the largest burdens you can take off your loved one is to make known what you wish to have done upon your death. We at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center and Muscadet are here to assist you in making your wishes known to your family in a comfortable, stress-free environment.
WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765. Learn how you can own a home without needing 20% down.
A high in the low 40s today. Not quite as warm as yesterday. Partly cloudy and cool tonight. A low of 19. Saturday clouds thicken and breezy conditions. A high of 34. Saturday night a low of 28 with a 50% chance of patchy light snow, sleet, and freezing drizzle. And Sunday 47 with patchy drizzle possible.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, Old Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center. Order your books here, and I give you a discount. That's the way it works at Old Cooch Books and Libations, and I have free shipping to any place in the United States. Old Cooch Books, the full-service bookstore, downtown Richland Center.
Take in the great outdoors and take along insurance coverage you can count on. Hi, this is Julie at State Farm. We know that rush of freedom you can only get outdoors. Maybe you're taking on the trails in your ATV or zipping around your favorite course in your golf cart. At State Farm, we understand your passion. Whether your recreational vehicle is an off-road vehicle, a snowmobile, or a travel trailer, we can cover you. Our State Farm recreational vehicle insurance is designed with your needs in mind. And the premium may be less than you think. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Serving up delicious meals and local radio. Sponsored by Richland Family Restaurant Studios.
Thanks for joining us here on WRCO Radio, and as you do today, we have a fun topic. We're talking about a new business in the area, and Scott Oxner is here from English Prairie Distillery in Muscadet. We've been wanting to hook up with him for quite a long time, and good to have you in here in the studio today, Scott.
Yeah, good morning.
Good to have you in here. So, English Prairie Distilling Company, kind of give us a little background on why you chose Muscadet and your whole history.
That's a big question people ask, why Muscadet? And my answer usually is, why not Muscadet? So my wife is from Muscadet. Her name's Sue, and her original last name was Patch. So her parents were from there. Her brother lives there. Her sister still lives there. She graduated from Riverdale High School. So we were looking at places to potentially move when we got ready to retire, but we weren't really ready to retire. We thought we'd like to open some kind of a business, do something in the downtown area or uptown area, and maybe buy a building, fix it up, and just do something interesting with it. And the distilling part came because there just wasn't a distillery anywhere near here. And we thought, well, maybe that'd be a fun thing to do, and I've been interested in it, and so is she. So we decided that's where we would start, and we bought a building downtown, the old Pink Spot, if you remember where that was. Mm-hmm. We started with that. We added onto the back of the building for a distillery. We soon found out that we didn't have enough room, and luckily the building next door, which was the Tailgaters, bar and restaurant for a long time, and the Avenue, and who knows what else before that, that became available. So we decided, as crazy as it sounds, we'll buy a building to save money. So along with the building, we got a whole empty lot that was right next to it, where there used to be a Blackhawk Supper Club, is what people remember. Mm-hmm. So we got that as well. So now we have a patio for live music and to hang out in the summer. So it's kind of a nice spot. So it worked out pretty well.
How much room do you need for the actual, you know, distilling process and all of that
stuff? We probably have about 800 square feet in the back. We've got a 300-gallon mash tun stripping still and a 100-gallon whiskey gin still. So that's it takes up a lot of room in there. There's not a lot of wiggle room. The front part of the old store is where we do the bottling and storage. So I'm just relaying that out this week. I've got to go buy 4 more racks and find places for more bottles and finished goods to go in there. So
did you have to study a lot and learn a lot about this whole thing and how it works?
I still do have to study and learn a lot. I mean, I've gone to a number of distilleries where I've worked there for a day or two just to watch what they're doing. I've watched tons of videos, like, you know, probably everybody else. I took a couple classes down in Kentucky to learn how some of the distilling and fermentation process works. The best advice I got was from Peter at Northern Waters Distillery up in Minocqua. And I went through it with him. I kept looking at the process and the equipment and wondered, can I even do this? And he looked at me, he goes, if I can do it, you can do it. So I'm like, all right, that's all I needed. So I kind of went forward from there. But really, if you can, it's really you're boiling water and the alcohol boils at 173 degrees, so you don't want to go too much above that. So you're trying to get the alcohol to release from the water and catch those vapors and then condense them down into just the alcohol. So if you can keep things under control and keep that temperature where you need it to be, it's not as hard as it sounds.
How long is the process, Scott, from like when you start boiling till you get it?
So if you do a mat, so what you call the first part of that first part of the process is a mash.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like brewing. So the mash tun is what you call a mash tun in brewing. It's the same thing. And distiller's beer is that first thing you get. It's at 8 or 10% alcohol, maybe 12. It just depends. So that's actually still called distiller's beer. Just like if you were a brewery, that would be the beer. So you kind of start off with that. Doing the mashing is maybe 2 to 3 hours. So you got to heat you got to heat everything up. Then you have to cool it down. So probably add an hour on each end of that. Once you cool it down, then you can pitch the yeast, which just means you put the yeast into that liquid. Then the yeast eats the sugars and the carbohydrates that are in there, and that's what produces the alcohol, because that's the byproduct of the yeast eating sugar.
And then you put it in a barrel?
Now you've got that first part, so you've got this kind of thick, weird-looking, it was really sweet when it went into the fermentation tanks because there's all that sugar in there.
Yeah.
The yeast ate all the sugar, all the sweet, but so sometimes it's a little weird and a little funky. That's what you take and you put into that back in the still, and then you cook all the alcohol off of it. So you do a stripping run, which means you take all the alcohol, whether it's the good, bad, or ugly, you take all that off. Then that probably takes, I'd say probably 6 to 8 hours. So it's a slow process. You kind of stand there and watch it, and there it goes, and you come back and it's still going, and you come back, and you're really just controlling the temperature at that point. Once you collect that alcohol off of that first mash, then you take that over at some point, maybe right away or maybe a day or two later, you take that over to the whiskey still. That's got a number of plates or columns in it, so you can distill the whiskey over and over and over as it rises up through that column. That takes probably another 6 to 8 hours to do that. As you're doing that, then you're doing a cut run. So then you're taking off the heads, and the heads are like methanol and acetone, things you don't want to drink. You can maybe clean paintbrushes with, but you don't want to drink it. You want to get to the ethanol. That's what you can drink. So once you get to that point, that's where, if you've ever watched the Moonshiner show, they're always trying to get rid of the heads. There's the hearts and the tails or the faints. The hearts is what you want to keep. That's the alcohol that you want to maintain and keep. And then that's what you're going to use to either put in a bottle or put in a barrel.
So much science involved.
There is science. I mean, anybody that had me in high school as a science teacher would be shocked that I know anything about this. But it's not as hard as it sounds. But if I'd really gotten in trouble where I had a lot of problems with bacteria or things like that, I might need to call a real scientist at some point and have them come in. But yeah, we can do the proofing, we can do the pitching the yeast, we can do some measurements on some of those things. And I'm learning as every day. It's a learning experience because I'm always finding something out that I didn't know exactly how that worked, or I have to make a call to somebody to find out what am I doing here? Why is this going wrong?
I like the names of some of your product. Could you go over some of those?
Sure. So we got a couple products right now. So we've got a grain neutral spirit, which is a corn. It's kind of a corn based whiskey. We just call it Muscadet Shine. So usually, you talk about moonshine. We just thought it was kind of a cool play on words to do the Muscadet Shine. And some people call it they call it Dushine, and that's still kind of cool sounding. So I'm fine with that, but it's Muscadet Shine.
Muscadet Shine's got a nice ring to it.
We use that like a vodka in all of our drinks.
Okay.
So we have that one. The York State Rye, that's a rye whiskey. So our rye whiskey and our bourbon we're buying from another company right now as we kind of get things started. The York State came from, I'd have to look back now, I got to think about the actual date. It was back in the 1860s or 70s after the Civil War. Wisconsin was a frontier state at one point, and we don't think about it like that, but they were trying to get people to move here, and the people they were trying to get to move here were the people that New York didn't want anymore, or they wanted to get rid of. So those were Irish people, Germans, a lot of different immigrants that were coming in. They said, hey, why don't you just keep moving over to Wisconsin? You'll like it better over there. And they kept, in one of the newspaper accounts in the Richland Observer, they called them York Staters, because there's all these people coming, moving here from New York State. So I just decided the other, that York State would be good because the first thing Germans brought to the United States was rye, and they made rye whiskey. So they probably were making rye whiskey here, even in Richland County where they weren't supposed to. I thought the York State rye was kind of a cool name.
Yeah. Definitely is. Any others?
The rail splitter bourbon. I just out for a ride one day, got up to Highway 33. And Highway 33 is the rail splitter highway. So it was the original group in the Army that fought the Black Hawk Wars. So they were called the rail splitters. And Abraham Lincoln was in the rail splitters. So that's kind of how it got a kind of a famous name. So the rail splitters, I think that was based in Milwaukee for a while. But Highway 33 from La Crosse to Port Washington is the rail splitter highway. So I just thought it was a cool name.
Yeah, that really is.
Yeah. So we'll come up with some new ones as we get new products. But we're going to try and keep them, you know, driftless area-based names.
I'm guessing that, you know, there's a real circuit of people that just love to stop by places like this. And you're probably getting a lot of people from outside the area stopping by, aren't you?
Yeah. People just go on a, you know, they go on a tour. That's what my grandparents would call it. They're going to go on tours. It meant they were going to drive around and stop at two or three bars on a Sunday afternoon. But people will go and they'll stop off at, you know, they'll come to our place. They'll go up to Wild Hills Winery. Mm-hmm. They'll have something up there. Maybe they'll go to Driftless Glen. They'll kind of do that little tour around the area. And then they've got these booklets that you can buy throughout the state. One's an old-fashioned book that we've got, an old-fashioned passport, so you can kind of buy one, get one, or get 50% off, but it's got 170 different places in it. There's a bourbon or a barrel book that lists all the different distilleries in the state. They've got a supper club book. There's a bunch of different things in the state that you can kind of, helps you kind of tour around and gets you like a half-price drink along the way or maybe something free.
What makes English Prairie Distillery unique, Scott?
That's a good question. In Muscadet or in our area, it's definitely unique the way we've set it up. We tried to do something where when people walk in the door, they look around and do exactly what, you know, you said earlier is, why is this here? What are you doing? I don't understand what's going on. We tried to really fix up the buildings and give them a look and a feel that looks like it is old or maybe would have felt like when it was first built, but is all kind of updated amenities. So we're mixing cocktails and we're doing things that are different than a lot of places. Everybody's making a drink, but we're mixing like real cocktails as we go along and offering different stuff and coming up with new drinks for every different holiday or weekend. And so now we're getting into February, so we'll get into Valentine's Day, and then we'll get into spring, and we'll get into summer. So then we offer different things that kind of reflect the season as well.
It's awesome that you've repurposed a couple of buildings, mm-hmm. you know, that were vacant in that area in Muscadet, and then also you have a unique business. So it's really kind of the best of both worlds, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, I still have people that they see it says English Prairie Distillery and they say, what kind of beer do you brew? So it's just kind of funny with the, you know, there's everybody's so used to breweries and they're not used to distilleries. There's about, I think there's 30 plus distilleries, maybe right around 30 distilleries in the state. And they're kind of sprinkled all over. Some are a little larger. You're probably familiar with like Driftless Glen and J. Henry. They're some of the bigger ones. But there's a lot of little ones like us as well.
That's good stuff. Yeah. English Prairie Distillery in Muscadet, our subject today on the morning show. Not only do you have drinks, you have some stuff for sale, but you also have a lot of live music, probably prolific music scene there in Muscadet as well.
We're trying to have regular music on weekends, usually. Once in a while, we'll do it during the week. We're open Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So we've got open mic night the second Wednesday of every month. And one of our bartenders, Mike Johnson, who lives here in town, he just decided he thought it would be kind of a good idea. I'm like, that sounds like a great idea to me. And the first night we did it, he got there at 5 o'clock, and we sat there at 5:30, and there was nobody there. And we had a sign-up sheet, and we're looking around going, is anybody going to even come? And all of a sudden, somebody came in, another guy came in, and we had five or six people the first night.
Oh, that's good.
And they're all really good, too. That's what's crazy. It's not a karaoke night. If you're a really bad singer and want to come in and sing a song, you're more than welcome. But the people that come in are really, they're talented. They're bringing in their guitars. He's got everything that they can hook up, all their musical equipment too. So far, I think there's somebody that's keeps telling us they're going to bring in a piano, an electric piano in. So it's been fun so far.
Down the road.
Yeah, a lot of people coming in for it. And then music on, Fridays, Saturdays, or Sundays. This Saturday, Mike is playing Saturday night from 5:30 to 8:30. We close at 9 o'clock. So when you get older, 9 o'clock is kind of a good time, to close. When things start to get crazy, that's when we like to close, because that's everybody can have their drinks, they can get home and not have a hangover in the morning.
Now, somebody told me that once, we're closing down now when we used to just be going out. I think that's what happens when you get a little older.
Right? Exactly. And, that's kind of our demo too. The people that come in, they're not the night owls. We get a lot of younger people that come in. They usually come in the afternoon while they're out doing something. They come in before they go out. But it's the people that are coming in, 30s, 40s, 50s, somewhere in there. Even older, like me.
What was your previous occupation then, Scott?
So I worked in manufacturing for a long time at different companies, sheet metal fabrication. I worked for conveyor companies. So was either in operations to start off with, and I got into kind of sales and marketing.
Probably never would have thought you'd be doing this kind of business later in life, did you?
Well, it was always something I thought about. We talked about, my wife and I talked about a brewery for a long time, and I just couldn't quite figure out how the logistics were going to work as far as how much beer we could make and how much we could sell. Beer's got a shelf life. I mean, if you go to a craft brewery, it's really only good for maybe two or three months. After that, and now you've got to find a distributor to go sell it, and liquor just doesn't have a shelf life. If you buy a bottle of bourbon or Dayshine, you can have that on a shelf. If you treat it right, it could be there for years, and you open it up and it tastes fine. So it seemed to be a better business opportunity for us, and it makes it a little easier for distribution as well.
What was how long did the process take? I mean, you probably hit a few roadblocks along the way when you were trying to get started, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd say we really started talking about this about 4 years ago. So we've been buying some barrels of bourbon over the last 4 years that are aging. Our first barrels are going to be 4 years old in March. So I don't even know how they're going to taste yet. So we're bringing those down from the place we've been kind of partnering with. So those we'll start to use and bottle. And I'm probably going to come up with a new name for that bourbon. That was 4 years ago. So we've been buying bourbon along the way. And then we started planning for the distillery probably 2.5 years ago. So we bought the first building, learned a lot about how to apply for a distilled spirits plant, the DSP, from the federal government. So there's a lot of rules. You can't even imagine the federal government has rules on how to do things. It sounds crazy, I know. But it took some time to kind of go through that and find out exactly how they wanted things, when they wanted it, when we could finally get our distilling license. So yeah, we went through, we had an architect we had to work with because of the food process inside of it, because alcohol is food. So we had to go through a food processing, licensing for that as well. So that took a little bit, it took a little time. I don't think there was anything that really stopped us or slowed us down like, oh no, we can't do this. The village has been very helpful. The Southwest Development Commission's been really helpful. The Grant County Development, I mean, everything has been worked really well. Yeah. It's been a good process. It took a long time. We opened last June, probably in between Christmas and New Year's. I just sat there and said, we're done with phase one is done. We're open. We kind of know what we're doing. Now we can really get into doing more distilling and kind of getting going in that side of it more. Cause I've been doing some distilling, but just not as much as we're going to be doing in the future.
When you're talking about the federal government getting involved, all I could think of was, running the back roads of Richland County with, moonshine in your car.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're trying to guard against, obviously.
That's what they're trying to stop you from. Yeah, that's, I think they're probably more worried about you not paying taxes than driving around with moonshine.
Probably.
I think they'd be fine with you driving around with moonshine if they thought they could get some money out of it. Sorry, anybody from the state, the Department of Revenue that's listening right now.
But I didn't think about it, too, you know, from the food aspect. You've got to kind of mind your P's and Q's there as well, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. It's a little different because we're, you know, the things we're working with, the grains and the liquids, it's different than if you're at a like a cheese plant or a meat plant. I mean, they have a much stricter, higher level of sanitation. I mean, we got equipment that needs to be cleaned. We've got, you know, it's fairly simple process for us.
Are you serving food or are you planning to do that down
at
the
tasting room? We have more, I'd say, snacks or mm-hmm. charcuterie board kind of things, cheese spreads, cheese, meat, that kind of stuff. We can bring in food. Anybody can bring in food if they wanted to. People order pizzas from across the street at Sportsman's all the time, and then they'll bring pizzas over. They'll buy food and bring it in, or they'll bring a picnic basket, or they'll say, hey, we're having a birthday for somebody. We're going to bring in 8 people, and we want to bring a cake in and some food. And like, that's no problem. Yeah.
Wonderful. You talked about the outdoor patio.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you're looking forward to when the weather does get nice and you can go back there again, right?
Yeah, that'll be nice. Probably in, I'd say, you know, maybe April we'll start to push it a little bit if the weather's halfway decent, and we'll do some music outside or things outside because at least during the day we'll be in the maybe 60s. We're going to try and open an outdoor bar this summer. We got it. When it gets busy, we ran out of bar space inside for people to come in and try and get orders, so we're going to try and open a little small outdoor bar as well.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
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 Expanding a little bit. The Muscadet Morel Festival will be coming up, too. I'm guessing you'll tie in with that event, too.
Yep, that'll be a big one. We're doing, I'm not sure exactly, we'll have music, you know, that weekend, probably Friday and Saturday night. I'm going to try and make a barreled old fashioned, like make old fashions in a full barrel and serve them right out of the barrel.
Oh.
So I'm still trying to figure out how I want to do that, or what the logistics is of that, how I'm going to move around a 500-pound barrel of old fashions, but we'll figure that out.
Just have a ladle and just
probably
sip it
may
out.
Have some kind of a spigot on it, so I can just open it up and pour out a drink, and we'll have, you know, 500 old fashions in there.
I was thinking of Wapatui. They used to, you know,
people, yeah.
Everybody come and dump something in, and yeah, you're not doing that, obviously. But
no, that is not something I ever want to do again. That's a bad scene.
Oh man. So, are you currently in the process? Do you still quite often, or how often do you actually make your product, then, Scott?
So this week. This week I've actually got a gin product that we just started making. I've been making really small batches, like 3 bottles at a time. It's a Usonian gin. So, you know, Usonian word comes – that was a word that Frank Lloyd Wright used. Usonia is United States, North America. That's kind of where it came from. It wasn't invented by Frank Lloyd Wright, but he liked it, and he used it in his Usonian houses. That was that kind of what became a ranch-style house, you know, that sort of flat, you know, roof mm-hmm. with the windows, and that's kind of where that came from. And I actually drove past the Usonian Inn in Spring Green and thought, oh, Usonian Gin sounds like a really good name. And I wanted to tie in, again, Frank Lloyd Wright, who's more famous than that in the Driftless area.
Great. So you have those light bulb moments once in a while.
Yeah, yeah, we've got, I forgot about this one. So we do a sugar shack shine. So out of our day shine, we add maple syrup to it. So that, I mean, it tastes really good. But we buy the maple syrup from Driftless Gold, just north of town. And we were walking around, and they were giving us a tour. And they said, yeah, up there's our original, that's our old sugar shack. And I thought, sugar shack shine. I'm like, that's... How could it? Thank you for the name. That was really easy because I wasn't sure what to call it. So I'm trying to come up with little names that are kind of catchy, and it fits it perfectly. So we've been making that for a while. But that we've already got that we've got the alcohol, and then we just mix in the maple syrup that we buy from them.
Yeah, it's nice that you incorporate other area small businesses too that.
Yeah. So I'm working on a rum right now that I. It tastes pretty good. It smells a little weird. But that happens sometimes with rum. It kind of gets like a little bit of a funky smell. So I'm going to make another batch of it. I want to make enough to put a couple barrels together and let it age for a while and see what happens to it. That's sometimes that's the problem with, like, the gin I'll be able to make. We'll be able to put that in bottles, and it'll be ready to go right away. Whiskeys and gin, whiskeys and rum and other things like that, they need to go in a barrel, and they could be in a barrel for 3 months, 6 months, 4 years, and you might not know what it tastes like. Another one I'm going to start doing is a single malt whiskey, which is similar, most people would call it scotch. But if you're not in Scotland, you don't get to call it scotch. You get to call it single malt whiskey. But that, again, that's one of those where you make it and then you have to put it in a barrel and wait 3 or 4 years to see what it tastes like. Because according to where I've been and what I've tasted as it goes in the barrel, it doesn't taste that great. But after like the third or fourth year, that's when it starts to really develop. And we can use recycled barrels for those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like a bourbon barrel, it's got to be a brand new charred oak barrel. That's the rule. So bourbon is the only American spirit that is regulated by the federal government. There are rules on what you can and can't do with it. So every bourbon has to be in a brand new bourbon barrel or a brand new charred oak, white American oak. So it can't be, you can't have bourbon in a French oak barrel. You could finish it, but it has to start off in a American white oak barrel, and it's got to be charred on the inside.
Where do you get those then?
There's a few places that make them in Minnesota. There's places in Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri. That's where most of them are made. Yeah.
Those barrels are pretty valuable too.
They can be expensive. The first barrels we bought, just the barrels, were probably less than $200. Now they're pushing $400.
Oh my goodness.
But there was a big boom on making bourbon for the last 3 or 4 years with some of the really big companies, and they drove the prices up. The prices for if you would just go out on the market and buy bourbon, the prices for a barrel are dropping from where they were probably 2 or 3 years ago. They're still, I think they just went a little crazy and overproduced. So if you're familiar with kind of like the bourbon people that like to go out and hunt for bourbon bottles, everybody was looking maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They were looking for like a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old bourbon, and they could find them all over the place because all these distilleries down in like Kentucky and everywhere else, they had all these old barrels. So they were bottling this stuff, and people were like, "Oh, I found this old bourbon." The old bourbon's kind of gone. And when they went crazy and started really making a lot of barrels, they were trying to refill that hole that they dug themselves. The problem is it's going to take another 10 to 12 years to get back to where there might be some of that old barrel, old bourbon again. So
I'm curious, when you're distilling, have you had any perils like where you thought, oh, you anticipated it was going to be something good after a couple of years and it really wasn't very good?
Not really. So far the things that we've tasted that are, you know, that are still aging, they kind of change a little. There's a lot of things happening inside the barrel, the alcohol and some chemical compounds that are in the alcohol are reacting with the wood and the chemical compounds in the wood. So you could go out and get a barrel that is 2 years old or a year and a half old and taste it and go, this thing tastes great. Come back in a month and you might taste it and go, what happened to that great taste? It's gone. And it just kind of goes back and forth. And most people, they'll wait 3 to 4 years. And that's kind of the sweet spot where things start to calm down in the barrels and it just gets better. So you can find a barrel out there probably that you don't like, but you blend those. You find a really good barrel that has a good flavor. You find one that doesn't have a great flavor, but still got a good flavor. You can combine those two and go from there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to be having some open mics and different things going on. Do you have goals for 2025, Scott? Some things you'd like to get done by the end of the year?
Well, I'd like to definitely be producing, some of the single malts and rums and some new whiskeys. That we can age in smaller barrels, that we can get done a little bit faster, or even things that we can serve that are clear, because it doesn't have to go in a, it doesn't have to go in a barrel. So you can have a White Dog whiskey, or a clear whiskey. It's just it's unaged, so you can't call it bourbon, but they still can have a really good flavor.
Hmm. Have you figured out anything you can run your car with or not?
Well, If you ever go drive past an ethanol plant, ethanol plants make the majority of the vodka in the our country. And people don't think about it like that. So if you really like, if you really like your vodka, you probably would really love what you know how it runs in your car. So I mean, they have a, they've got a massive production. I mean, they make millions of gallons at a time. But the ethanol that's in your car and the ethanol that's in vodka is not it's not very much different.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure getting to know you, Scott. Yeah. We hope people will stop by and see you. What are the hours again for English Prairie?
So we're open on Wednesdays from 4 to 9. We're open Fridays 4 to 9, Saturdays 2 to 9, and Sundays 11:30 to 4.
And some unique drinks as well.
Yeah.
You dream those up at night? Or?
My wife, Sue, and my sister-in-law, Linda, come up with a lot of drinks. I'll send them things that I see it. They look kind of cool, and then they'll go and find different things, or they'll just find them, and they'll come up with the drinks. So, we've got a whole... got a whole list of drinks that we make, and I've been bartending a little bit once in a while. So I used to bartend, and I used to do it like everybody else. I'm like, oh, rum and coke, who can't make that? Now I got to make a real drink, and we've got little cheat sheets that we can kind of go through. So I've also got to, I know kind of the basics, but I'll always forget. Like there's one thing that I forgot the thing, or I put in the wrong glass, or I, you know, it happens. It happens sometimes. They like to keep me away from behind the bar.
Oh, I suppose.
I take up too much room.
Well, we appreciate you coming down to see us here today and keeping touch. Come back, and we'd love to promote some of your live music too. So let us know when you've got somebody.
Yeah, definitely. There. Thank you.
And you have Mike Johnson, you said?
Mike Johnson, yep.
Tomorrow night.
Yep.
Yeah, good. So go down and request a song from him or something.
He knows a lot of songs.
Does he?
Yeah,
okay.
He's really good.
That's tomorrow. All right. Well, thanks, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. That is Scott Ochsner of English Prairie Distillery right there in Muscadet. Stop by and see him and check out what it's all about on The Morning Show. We'll have more in just a moment.
Now is a good time to reflect on your pharmacy needs. If you're thinking about switching, the place to go for great service from people who care is the Richland Family Prescription Center. The staff and pharmacists do whatever it takes to help you. They're never too busy to answer questions. Their goal is to be your primary source of healthcare information. With everyone watching every penny, they know it's dangerous and unhealthy not to take your medicine as prescribed by your doctor. They've always matched any price and honor any prescription program. They also work with you and your doctor to find less expensive medications. And the Richland Family Prescription Center features free in-town delivery and free mailing. The Richland Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Wilkinson Auctions is proud to present our annual Hillsboro Area Equipment Auction, Wednesday, February 19th at the Hillsboro Auction Yard. This is a huge auction with tractors, farm equipment, tillage equipment, planters, trucks, trailers, combines, and more. We're taking quality consignments of equipment. Get your equipment up to the Hillsboro Auction Yard today. This is a live auction with online bidding available. The Hillsboro Area Equipment Auction, Wednesday, February 19th at the Hillsboro Auction Yard. More info at wilkinsonauctions.com.
Does your employer offer 6 weeks of paid time off in your first year? Rockwell Automation does. How about a $2,500 sign-on bonus? A 401k with company match? Annual bonuses for all employees? Rockwell offers all that and more, including paid parental leave, tuition reimbursement, unlimited referral bonuses, and endless growth opportunities. This isn't your typical manufacturing job. It's a great place to work because of the great people who work there. Join the team. First shift starts over $20 an hour. Second shift over $22 an hour. Apply at rockwellautomation.com/careers, search Richland Center, or stop by any Wednesday starting February 12th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for an on-the-spot interview. Rockwell Automation, where talent meets opportunity.
Hello, WRCO listeners. This is Kenny, the wannabe baker. Hey, Hank, have you tried one of Christie's breakfast entrees?
Did you make them?
No, of course not. My role is still very limited. But Christie and her team do offer several very tasty breakfast options, quiche, sandwiches, and breakfast treats, along with great coffee and other beverages to entice your palate. Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Cafe, where every day is sunny.
Want to test drive nationwide 5G coverage with U.S. Cellular?
Sure.
Download the U.S. Cellular Try Us app. Want to test drive U.S. Cellular even faster? Just get a race car driver to be your personal chauffeur.
Just let me buckle my... Whoa! Hey, my calls and data work great out here.
Test drive U.S. Cellular's nationwide 5G coverage free for 30 days.
You can pull over now, please.
U.S. Cellular, built for us. Terms apply. Visit uscellular.com/try us.
We've made it easy for you. Shop the online store now at allamericandoitcenter.com. All American Do It Center has over 65,000 items available at the Do It Best warehouse. If we don't have it in stock, we can ship to the store for free, as our stores receive deliveries from the warehouse twice weekly. Same-day pickup and ship-to-home options also available for your convenience. Shop online at allamericandoitcenter.com in Tomah, Sparta, and Richland Center.
Looking for an exciting career opportunity with a world leader in coated glass for residential windows and doors? Look no further than Cardinal CG. They're hiring for all shifts, including production positions, with the potential to earn up to $29 an hour. Enjoy up to 6 weeks of time off per year and start earning vacation hours on your very first day. Apply in person Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Interviews and tours are available at 1024 East Madison Street in Spring Green. Join the Cardinal CG team today and be a part of the future of residential glass innovation.
Thanks to Scott Oxner for being our guest on the first part of the morning show here on WRCO Radio on a Friday, January 31st. We're going to switch gears a little bit, and we've been wanting to fit these in for just a little while here now since we first learned of the Voice of Democracy and Patriots Pen winners from our area, and we try to do this every year on the morning show, and working with Marge Freeman, local coordinator as well, VFW Post 2267, honoring first, second, and third place winners. And today, first of all, we're going to play back a couple of the speeches from the young people in the area. Their teacher is Christine Brenninger at Eagle School here in Richland Center. And the Voice of Democracy winners are a little different age group. They're grades 9 to 12. So these are the middle school level. And first of all, the second place speech submitted by Nolan Hayes, who was a seventh grade student at Eagle School in Richland Center.
My voice in America's democracy. As a 12-year-old, it may seem that I would not have a voice in America's democracy. However, I believe that I do have a voice, and my voice can affect our democracy. How is it possible that my voice can be heard, and who will listen to me? As an American, I am proud to take advantage of my right to free speech. With my use of social media, by talking with local veterans, and through buying goods made in America. Social media is the most common way for my generation to express their voice in America's democracy. While all social media websites are not appropriate for teenagers to expose their opinions, there are some websites that are fine for teenagers to use in discussing their views. During the current election season, teenagers are especially giving their opinions on social media about who is the better candidate in this year's election. I can be a part of the conversation through social media sites. Talking with local veterans is another great way to use my voice in America's democracy, because veterans can explain what it was like to serve in war. They can help me decide whether if I should join the armed forces. And I can also encourage them with my thankfulness for their sacrifice. By doing so, I not only support our veterans, but also my voice is heard. Buying goods made in America is another way to express my voice in America's democracy. Purchasing American-made products puts more money into our economy and helps the economy get back on its feet. These sales give tax money to the government, which can be used to help the residents of America with programs that provide aid for food and housing. My purchases are a way of making my voice heard. I believe that my voice is being heard when I share my ideas about America's democracy. As a 12-year-old, I do take advantage of my right to a free speech in several ways, including through the use of social media, talking with local veterans, and buying American-made goods. Young people like me need to be heard in America's democracy.
Thank you very much to Nolan Hayes, 7th grade student at Eagles School, second place finish in the Voice of Democracy, and certainly lots of great, I should say Patriots Pen, and that's grades 6 through 8. So second place for Nolan Hayes, and the first place entrant, as judged this year, Rocky Brandenburg, who is an 8th grade student, also at Eagles School. His teacher is Christine Brenninger.
My voice in America's democracy. Having a free voice is an essential part of America's government, a defining feature of our democracy, which keeps the government accountable. My voice in America's democracy is important because it contributes to the fairness of America's democracy, allows petitions to be made, and encourages others to express themselves free from worry. Fairness and equality are important aspects of American democracy and can be achieved through my voice and the voice of others. In dictatorships, a free voice is non-existent because government makes decisions without consideration for their people. America's democracy, on the other hand, allows free speech and also allows voting with secret ballots. Whether it be through laws electing the president or other matters of American life, I can affect outcomes with my voice. Through social media, peaceful protests, and petitions, I can get the attention of the government and advocate for fairness and equality in all areas of American society. Often, changes are made and decisions reverted because of voices like mine. Petitions provide evidence that change is needed and wanted. In my opinion, petitions are one of the most effective ways to use my voice and request changes. In American history, for example, petitions were used for change during the anti-slavery and women's suffrage movements. Many smaller but still significant changes are made through petitions every day. These petitions are often made on paper or typed on a computer. Fortunately, websites such as change.org have been created to simplify the process of writing petitions. In America, I can express myself in any lawful way without the concern of being punished. In many countries, if I would make a negative statement about a government official, I could be fined or sent to prison. If our democracy did not allow freedom of speech, speaking publicly about the government would be risky, and criticizing her decisions would not be possible. Unfortunately, people often forget how lucky we are to be able to speak our minds without fear of punishment. Each voice, including mine, is significant. My voice in America's democracy is particularly important to me. It is one of the most defining features of our democracy. It helps to keep the government accountable and guards against corruption. My voice is important in America's democracy because it helps to protect equality and fairness for citizens, encourages change through petitions, and gives me power to fearlessly express my ideas.
Again, congratulations to Rocky Brandenburg, an 8th grade student at Eagles School, a first place winner in the Patriots Pen competition, the 2024-25 theme, My Voice in America's Democracy. Thanks to Rocky and Nolan for their entries. And Jaden Hager, also of Eagles School, finished third in that competition. The Voice of Democracy, as mentioned, grades 9 through 12 eligible for that. The 2024-25 theme is America Today, Our Forefathers' Vision? Among the students that sent us their entries, we have a third place finisher, Charles Zellhofer, who is a 9th grade student at Kickapoo High School. And teacher representative is Sarah Wallace of Kickapoo School. So here is Charles' speech.
Is America today our forefathers' vision? It seems like a simple question with a simple answer. Yes, we have achieved the goals of the preamble. We have established justice, ensured domestic tranquility, promoted general welfare, and most importantly, secured the blessings of liberty. According to that reasoning, we today are exactly as our forefathers envisioned. However, There is much more to take into consideration, so let us do just that. The Declaration of Independence states that all men are created equal, yet we are so very divided by race, gender, and religious beliefs. There are multiple incidents of black people's medical concerns not being taken seriously. This is due to doctors consciously or unconsciously stereotyping African Americans as having thicker skin or stronger immune systems. This does not warrant such disregard for their health. Even though they are darker in skin, they deserve equal medical treatment rather than the dismissive tone and lighter medicinal doses given by doctors. Another example of racism in society today is the racial wealth gap. From robertsmith.com. According to the U.S. Department of the Treasury, the average white family had $184,000 in wealth in 2019, as opposed to the mere $23,000 for black families. In addition to racism, there remains a fair amount of sexism in our country as well. There is a significant gender pay gap in many jobs, such as doctors, lawyers, and scientists. According to Forbes, in certain fields, men make up to 16% more than women. Beyond discrimination based on physical qualities, there is a staggering amount of religious discrimination. Although the First Amendment grants freedom of religion, many of us fail to recognize that. In spite of all this division our country has fallen victim to, we have come a long way in terms of unity and equality, which is something our forefathers had not foreseen. Many of our country's fathers and leaders have owned slaves. Since then, slavery has been abolished and black people have been freed. They can now own homes, have jobs, and vote. Another group of people to gain a great host of rights is women. Only 100 years ago, women could not vote. 170 years ago, women could not own property. Now, that seems like a long time, but keep in mind, the U.S. is only 246 years old. After much struggle, all people have finally gained the rights they deserve. But how we use and interpret those rights has changed over the years as we develop more and more technological advancements. Of course, the Founding Fathers knew our country would change and adapt, but it is impossible for them to have foreseen such a roar in technology. When our country was created, we had only horse and carriage and sailing ships, so traveling even short distances took many days. Since the invention of the automobile, motorboat, aviation, and locomotion, we can traverse entire continents and oceans in a matter of hours, something our forefathers never could have imagined. With transportation, communication has greatly advanced as well. It would be nearly a century after America's founding that the telephone was invented, and another century after that for the mobile phone to arrive. But one thing that no one from that time could have seen in their wildest dreams was the internet. It allows news to travel instantaneously rather than the few days to many weeks it took for a paper to go from town to town by mule. The internet allows instant international communication and transmission, a luxury no one could have expected. With all these advancements, our government has changed significantly. With the internet, news spreads faster, resulting in a far more informed population. With better transportation, government leaders can travel to other countries whenever they need to discuss foreign relations. As we have seen, America differs greatly from what our forefathers envisioned. We are more segregated than they stood for, yet far more united as a nation. We are incredibly advanced, both technologically and in terms of government and justice. In conclusion, America is not our forefathers' vision, but that may not be such a bad thing.
Charles Zellhofer, a ninth grade student at Kickapoo Schools, finishing third in the Voice of Democracy competition here in the area. VFW Post 2267 hosting and promoting this great event. And next up, we have the entry that finished first place. The entries sent to the 3rd District VFW, and one winner, Sam Edel, for which his entry has been sent to the state VFW. And if he wins at the state level, his entry will proceed to the national VFW. So here is Sam Edel, who is a 12th grade student at Kickapoo Schools. And again, his teacher is Sarah Wallace.
It is September 1787. The Constitutional Convention has just concluded. And as Benjamin Franklin is emerging from Independence Hall, a reporter asks, "Well, Dr. Franklin, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" To which Benjamin Franklin replies, "A republic, if you can keep it." What was the vision for this new republic? It was a nation founded on God-given rights inalienable rights, not privileges bestowed by a king or queen. It was a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people. A noble vision, if we could keep it. Does this vision of our forefathers still stand today? Yes, it does. I say yes because I still live in a country called America, a country still governed by the Constitution, but it could easily not be this way. Where would this country be if we lost the War of 1812, if we lost World War I, if we lost World War II? America would be long gone, and gone with it, the vision of our forefathers. But battle after battle, war after war, the men and women of our military have kept our nation whole and have given proof that the vision of our forefathers lives on. I am not saying this because this is a VFW speech. I am saying this because it is the truth. But our military cannot keep the vision for America alive on their own. They need help from their fellow Americans. For example, I met a veteran in my community who was a farmer, and he was also a part of the National Guard. When he was deployed to the Middle East for the first Gulf War, it was planting season. If he did not get his crops in the ground, his farm could easily go under. But his family and community rallied together and pitched in to make sure his crops got planted and harvested. I bet our forefathers saw the same community effort when so many farmers were fighting in the Revolutionary War. Everyday Americans serving those who serve, doing their part to keep our republic, to keep the vision alive. Whether military or civilian, every American can do their part in protecting the vision of our forefathers by engaging in our political system, by voting, and by debating the issues that face our nation. I see this in my small rural township during election season. I see members of my community serving as election officials. I see my friend's grandma bringing in a crock pot of Swedish meatballs to feed those officials. I see members of my community voting. I see the vision of our forefathers in living color. I see my fellow Americans keeping it, and it is a sight to behold. Our forefathers knew. They knew that they could have a vision for America and write it on parchment, but it would take Americans to keep it. And that was their true vision, a republic engraved on the hearts of the people, a republic kept by the people, and kept it they have. Our military has defended our country time and time again, and still do to this very day. While our military serves on the battlefield, there are Americans who support our military in whatever way they can, in their own backyards and farm fields. And there are Americans, military and civilian, who vote and keep our government living and vibrant. I see all of these patriots as the living proof that America today is the vision of our forefathers because they are the ones who keep it.
Sam Edel, who is a 12th grade student at Kickapoo School, who also won first place at VFW District, and his entry goes on to state. And we will know in February if he wins first place at the state level, for which his entry would go to the national level. Sam also placed very high scores a few years ago, and his entry also went on to nationals. He qualified to enter again since he did not win at the national level that year. However, he did receive a $1,000 scholarship at that event in Washington, D.C. Sam and his family will be at Oshkosh February 15th at the VFW Midwinter and will be a guest speaker in front of several hundred VFW members throughout the state of Wisconsin. Thanks to Mark Freeman for organizing this VFW Post 2267, which is dedicated to promoting patriotism and investing in our future generation. The chance for area high school students and their students in the area classes of the high schools and schools in the area to receive up to a $35,000 college scholarship, or also for a middle school student interested in winning a total of $5,000 in the Patriots pen. That wraps up this edition of The Morning Show on WRCO Radio. It's been a good week. We have a lot of great guests lined up for next week here on the program as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Boarding House Antiques in Richland Center, where you can treasure hunt in 17 rooms of antiques and gifts. There's live music at the Garden Stage every second Friday of the month, June through September. Tammy and Margie invite you to visit Tuesday through Saturday. Check out the historic Boarding House Antiques. Check them out on Facebook and their webpage. They buy antiques. 339 West Seminary Street in Richland Center, next to the depot.
Working outdoors often results in a great feeling afterwards, the feeling of having achieved something. Whether it's tackling fallen limbs, cutting firewood, or clearing land, Steel has a chainsaw for your next project. Find your Steel at Hillsboro Equipment, like the reliable MS-271 Farm Boss, a high-performance, high-tech chainsaw that's built to work day in and day out. Enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done with a Steel chainsaw from Hillsboro Equipment, Boston Equipment, or Slama's Lawn and Sport, Reedsburg.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Mark, today we talk about autopsies. Why, when, and how they work. And they are fairly common, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they're not as common as people might believe they are. So if you watch TVs, pretty much everyone seems to have an autopsy or something's done with that body. For the most part, autopsies are not done on most people. Autopsies are done for people that they don't necessarily know why they died. There's some questions around it. Maybe there's a criminal investigation that goes along with the death. So most people do not actually have an autopsy. Who determines if they have an autopsy is there's two different sources that it could come from. It could come from the county. So if the county questions the death, if there was maybe an accident of some kind, they may request an autopsy of that individual to just make sure that everything was, that the death is what it appears to be. So if that is requested by the county pays for that. So as taxpayers, we pay for those autopsies of those individuals. The other option is if, let's say, you wanted an autopsy done on your loved